back to a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
Nancy, I'm going to read your first three questions because, hold on, Kirk has to get my attention.
If the computer shuts off, it's still recording this continued call.
Okay.
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
You can end it with your phone.
Okay. All right. Good night's sleep. Now we're starting. I'm going to read your first three questions because they all had to do with sleep.
Okay.
Well, the first one sort of had to do with sleep, but let me address that first. And this is something that keeps coming up for a lot of you, so I want to make sure that you guys are clear about this. But Nancy asked, how do I facilitate myself as both the voice of fear, for example, and self? You mentioned in your book that this works best when you have someone else facilitating the conversation, but what if I don't have someone else, like at 3 a.m. in the morning when I can't sleep? So here's what I want you guys to understand. I do not expect you to facilitate yourself. I don't facilitate myself. It's very difficult to do. And when I do the four-step Art of Fear method, this is not about doing voice dialogue anymore. Okay. The voice dialogue is a teaching tool that I use with groups just to help you access your own intelligence or your own wisdom that you already possess. So once we're done with the voice dialogue, then I don't want us to think in terms of voice dialogue anymore. It'll just kind of naturally help you compartmentalize your life and see fear as maybe something separate, have you contemplate yourself. Like when I was learning voice dialogue with my teacher, I was probably doing, 12, I was being facilitated about 12 hours a week for years in voice dialogue. And it just kind of started helping me see the world from a bird's eye view and also just have more sharp awareness and clarity about what I was seeing, not just internally but also externally. So that's what voice dialogue is great for, the game of shift. When it comes to having an intimate relationship with your emotions, I don't think that it's necessary or useful. So I do not expect you to facilitate yourself. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Feeling a little relieved.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you are. just leave that up to me. And I leave that up to other people facilitating me. Like I said, I don't even facilitate myself.
Okay.
It's very difficult. All right?
Cool.
Second question. Or does anybody have anything that they want to ask about that or any other questions they have about that?
Mm-mm.
Right. Question two. I need help with the steps I take when I wake up in the middle of the night with a million thoughts in my head. However, I also wake up with a sort of restless leg thing, and that keeps me from falling asleep too. And then your third question is, I would like to go through the four steps again that we went through. So I don't know if everybody here has issues with sleep, but let me just kind of make this a group experience, even if you don't have issues with sleep, and just say that we're going to go over the four-step method that you can use when you're troubled or in a crisis, and I consider not being able to sleep in the middle of the night a crisis.
Yeah.
So that we're all on the same page. Now, I would say that I most use the four steps in the middle of the night when I can't sleep. I would say I use this at least five nights a week. And I'm going to tell you how I do it. And because I've been doing this work for a long time, I'm going to tell you how I do it when I need a little bit of help, and I'm going to tell you how I do it when I need a lot of help. And it's the same thing when you're not trying to sleep, for that matter. So when I need a little bit of help, I just go to the fourth step, and that's it. I just figure out what I'm feeling, which I can do really quickly. And then I just spend some time feeling it. And know that the thing that's bothering you or keeping you awake in this case may not necessarily be something to feel. It might not be an emotion. The things that I found that have woken me up in the middle of the night are racing mind. It could be a fear-based racing mind, which it usually is. It could be a feeling in my body. When I was going through menopause, it was just kind of a humming in my body, which wasn't emotional or thought-based at all. Like, it's always something different. And if it was my mind, if I would go to the fourth step, it's not a matter of feeling it. It would just be a matter of witnessing it. And when I witness my mind, usually it would be not thoughts like sentences. It would be shapes and triangles and swirls. If it was something that was menopausal, like my body humming, I found that if I did the fourth step and just merged with it or felt it or witnessed it, 50% of the time this would work. The other times it didn't make a dent in menopause kind of body humming. If it was emotional, sometimes the emotions would be kind of feel more mental and thought-based, and sometimes it would be something that's in my body. This is very effective, this fourth step, just to spend some quality time with it. Literally, I would do this and for 5 seconds, just identify what it is, spend some time with it, and then I'd wake up 2 hours later and I don't even remember falling asleep.
Wow.
So it would be that lightning fast. And actually, there was a study done in Harvard that if you do something, you know, they tested something else, but if you do the four steps, it should calm down that agitated part of you in 4 seconds. Conversely, if you were to spend some time trying to replace it with something more positive or distract yourself from it, the study showed that you can feel better in 4 minutes. So it's 4 minutes versus 4 seconds, and these 4 seconds are done without the repression of that thing, so it doesn't wake you up as strong the next night. Here's the last thing I'll say about this most simple approach is that if ever I can't figure out what it is, it takes me a little while before I finally remember, oh, yeah, it's always fear. Like if something's waking you up in the middle of the night, it's always fear.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that again. It's always fear. And it's the same thing during the day. If something's really bothering you, it's always fear. Because fear is at the core of any kind of negativity. It's at the core of, you know, thoughts. It's the core of other emotions like anger and sadness. It's like the primary ingredient behind almost your entire emotional experience, except for like joy and love and all that. But we're talking about the things that are bothering us in the middle of the night, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you can't figure out what it is, it's fear. And then do the fourth step and just spend some quality time with your fear. And you don't even need to spend some time looking for it or figuring out what it is. Just spend some time with it. Any questions?
Can you quickly just run through the four steps again? Sorry,
Well, we're getting there.
What are the four steps?
We're going to get there.
Oh, okay.
So I mentioned that when I can't sleep in the middle of the night, I do one of two things. There's the easy thing that I do if it's not that big of a problem, and then there's the big thing that I do, which is if it's a really big problem and I'm wide awake. Those are the four steps. We'll get to that in a second. But any questions about the simple process that I just outlined?
Mm-mm.
Okay. It's something that you can get really good at. You know, I've gotten really good at it, and it works. It's like my super secret trick, you know. I'm super proud of that. I am able to fall back to sleep every time I do this, except for with the menopause thing. So if it's something that's really keeping me awake, then you got to bring out the big guns, and that's when you engage in the entire four-step process. So the four-step process is a slightly different if it's in the middle of the night when I can't sleep.
Mm-hmm.
How I do it is I'll wake myself up a little bit. Usually when we can't sleep in the middle of the night, we want to kind of cling to whatever grogginess or sleepiness that we already have in order to fall back asleep, and it's hard to give that up. But I will actually wake myself up a little bit more to go through this. And I won't bother with the first step. It's unnecessary in the middle of the night. It's super heady. But I will do the body scan. I will try to figure out what I'm feeling, but what I'll do first is this. I will first find the part of me that feels really comfortable. Then I will find the part of me that feels really tired. And sometimes it doesn't even exist anymore at that point, but there's usually a crumb somewhere. And you just want to invite these feelings into the process. And don't call them voices. This is not voice dialogue. Just find how comfortable you are. Find some sleepiness. Invite those into the conversation and then forget about them. You know, you just want to have them there kind of in the room, right? And then I figure out what's keeping me awake. You know, is it my mind? Is it my body? Is it my body humming? Is it emotional? Like, what is it? Okay, I can't figure it out. Okay, it's fear. Whatever you do for your process. And then I spend some quality time with it. So I do the first two steps, though, inviting in your sleepiness and inviting in how comfortable you are, just because it's going to be necessary for that to be in place so that when you spend some quality time with a thing that's keeping you awake and it calms down, then they will tsunami the rest of your experience organically.
Okay.
Any questions?
No.
Nancy, do you have anything that you want to ask? Have you tried like this?
Like the little 5-second thing you do, I did try, and it does help. I mean, it's true when you don't fight it, you know, like, say, the restless leg thing. If I just, I don't even know what to call it, but not fighting it, just letting it be, it does help. I mean, sometimes it even, I get, like, milliseconds of it not even feeling it. But then I get in my head again, and then, oh, there it is, you know. But, I mean, it does work when you are one or not one with it. I don't know what you call it, but when you don't resist it and you just are there with it.
Right. And make sure that you have a separation between you and it. Like, you're experiencing it. You are not it. You're experiencing it. You're witnessing it. You're feeling it. You're embracing it. Like, it's different every time for me. Like, with my brain, with those triangles and circles, I'm just witnessing it and just finding it kind of fascinating. As for the restless leg thing, I don't know much about restless leg, but I think the next question that's coming up that Bob submitted, I think, is going to be relevant to that. What I've learned over the years is that whenever fear shows up, there's usually some sort of physical reaction. A lot of it comes from your resistance to restless leg. We're going to talk about yawning in a second. You know, when I'm feeling nervous, like when I'm about to give a speech and I'm way out of my comfort zone, I'm shaky. You know, I think that we can put a lot of these physical sensations and effects that come from fear into the same category, is that when these things show up, what I do is I exaggerate them. So if you have restless leg, don't try to get rid of it. Just, I think it's when your leg is just like, you know, I was sitting next to a guy on a plane and his leg was just bobbing like a sewing machine. You know, maybe that in the middle of the night, like, just exaggerate it. Let it do its thing. Your body wants to shake. Your body wants to yawn. Your body wants to have your leg go like a sewing machine. Let it do it. You know, exaggerate it even.
Okay. Yeah.
Any other follow-through questions on that from you, from anyone? So I have a video about what I just outlined about sleeping. It's a 3-minute video. I'll send it out to you guys as a group afterwards. It is probably the coolest thing I teach. And I hope I captured it here. It works like a charm. It really does. It's my secret weapon for sleep. Okay?
Thanks.
All right. Anybody have any more questions about the 4 steps? Because that wasn't really the 4 steps that I just went through. And David, I don't know how familiar you are with the 4 steps.
Yeah. I don't know them. So that's the reason why I just was asking a quick, just a recap or what the 4 kind of steps are. So I wasn't at your fear camp. Was it fear camp? Or no, the camp, but what would you say? Yeah, fear camp. I wasn't there. So, just quickly, just recapping what they are. That would be great for me. So,
okay. So I just went over a modified version of the 4 steps that I do just specifically for sleeping. The 4 steps, we're not going to go through them right now, but we will at some point during these phone calls, maybe not tonight.
Okay.
But the 4 steps are, in a nutshell, acknowledge that it's normal and natural to feel fear. Step 2, do a body scan, locate what do you feel, where do you feel it, how strong is it?
Mm-hmm.
Step 3 is now look into your resistance to that or your relationship with it. Are you resisting it in any way?
Mm-hmm.
And if so, then we stop here and you just spend some quality time with your resistance. And then step four is now you feel your discomfort. And I'll send a PDF of the four steps plus the advanced bonus step out to the group after this call is finished as well.
Okay.
So I'm going to send you the three-minute video on how to sleep better, and I'm going to send you guys the PDF on the four steps. Okay?
Fantastic. Yeah.
Anything else before we move on?
No.
All right. Bob, are you on the phone?
I am here. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I'm trying to
read your
Bluetooth of the phone. So.
Okay, I'm going to speak up then.
No,
I'm going to read
your
question.
Good. You're good. Okay.
All right. And I don't know if the question has changed because I saw that you had an insight in the middle of the question and maybe you already explored this, but you wrote, I accessed a lot of raw emotion during a 5-day meditation retreat last week. Now that I'm home and dealing with routine life, I'm finding that whenever I really begin to tap into feelings and emotion, I begin to yawn. The yawning seems to act like a pressure relief valve, but I don't want to relieve the pressure. I want to feel the emotion. As I write this, I realize that the yawning is an invitation for further exploration, so I'll go there next time. Do you have any insights or suggestions as to how to approach yawning? Do you have any amendments to the question since you wrote this?
Not really. I haven't had that much time to really explore that yet. I just say that I feel a little more relaxed about it now. And there's just this transition period of coming out of a very intense emotional experience and kind of getting back into daily life. I realize the emotions aren't going to be right on the surface as easily.
Was the meditation retreat a goal-oriented meditation?
No, it was. It was a guided meditation period. So plenty of time. I did a lot of Pinhen on my own. And but then the real breakthrough moments had more to do with stepping out of meditation and getting more somatic into song and dance and five rhythms stuff, and that's where it really broke the dam on me.
Okay, and there's a lot of background noise. So if somebody's making background noise, if you could just mute for a second, that would be great. While I'm talking to Bob.
Sorry, maybe it's me. I apologize. Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you. All right. Let's go over this. And another thing that I'll send you guys as a group is my flight list. And some of you have seen this and some of you haven't. But the list is a list of things that we do rather than allow ourselves to feel. And on this list, there's some physical sensations that happen when people don't want to feel their emotions. And on this list, I wrote coughing, yawning, smiling, fidgeting, not breathing, that sort of thing. And Bob, I don't know if you saw this list and this is why you were concerned.
No, I do have the list actually, yeah.
Okay. So when people yawn, you know, this is kind of an association with being tired or bored or just not interested, but actually we yawn because we need more oxygen. You know, and we want to increase our oxygen to wake up, basically. So a lot of people yawn when they're anxious because the yawn increases the oxygen that allows you to wake up and be more present. So it almost aids in the anxiousness, you know, because the anxiousness, aka fear, is here to wake us up and help bring our A game to everything that we do. And then if you yawn, you add some oxygen to that, you know, that's going to be the secret sauce. The primary ingredient in activating that anxiousness. You know, Apollo Ono, if you guys remember him from the Olympics, speed skater, he was very famously yawning a lot before his Olympic races, and it was suggested that he was doing that to kind of off vent his anxiousness and fear. But actually, the increased oxygen is what increases your consciousness, attention, and focus. And so there's kind of more information out there now about this, now that people have had a chance to study it a little bit, that that's actually what was happening. So, Bob, to you, though, your interpretation, even though this was an intake of energy and an intake of oxygen, you see it more as an expelling of anxiety, like a pressure relief valve. But you're breathing in. You're not necessarily breathing out when you yawn. So tell me more about why your interpretation of this is not that it's inducing oxygen, but actually relieving yourself of something.
Yeah, it's a good question, because if you say that, I guess my first impression was, you know, I want to feel the feeling. I've had these powerful emotional releases and gained access to a lot more emotion lately. So when these feelings start to come up, I want to go there. So it's almost as if the yawning is just subconscious getting in the way. I guess that's how I experienced it. Maybe if I spend more time with it, I can kind of work through that. But it was almost like a sense of, when I yawned, it was like a sense of waking up out of a dream and feeling kind of disappointed.
It may or may not be your interpretation. So let's see, because I've seen both. I have a friend of mine who is a former professional skier that was at my same level. I mean, he was very, very famous. And every time he gets around me, he starts yawning. And I don't know if he's like that with a lot of other people, but he certainly is that way with me. Whenever I'm on the phone with him, he's literally yawning once every 30 seconds. It's really noticeable. Worse even if we're in person. And at first I thought, well, is he just bored with me? Am I, like, not entertaining enough? Because that's our inclination to believe that. And then, of course, when I became a fear specialist, I realized he feels nervous around me. And this could be a way to relieve some of the pressure. And I'm like, well, isn't that interesting? Why does he feel nervous around me? Like I'm suggesting, or like the science is showing, is this a way to have him bring more oxygen into the experience of talking with me? We don't see each other very often. You know, obviously he feels nervous around me. I don't know. It could be interpreted both ways. I can see how you would see it as some sort of pressure relief or expelling of fear, even though it's not an exhale, it's an inhale. You know, it's kind of oddly feels so refreshing to yawn that it feels like an exhale, but it's not, it's an inhale. So are you telling me, though, that it feels more like you not dealing with your emotions?
I can't really say that. I can't really say that, because it does feel like that waking up, that sort of expansive feeling of taking in that oxygen. But then it just feels like the emotions just sort of recede into the background. And then there's just that sort of moment. Maybe I'm just putting too much pressure on myself to feel the feeling, and I just allow it to do what it wants to do.
I think that's a really good advice that you just gave yourself, because the emotion is supposed to run its course at some point. You know, you don't want to purposefully hang on to any kind of emotion. And it's kind of like sneezing or coughing, you know. You don't want to, like, hang on to your sneeze or hang on to your cough. Like, we've all been around people that are, like, trying to not cough, you know. And what happens, it just, like, wells and wells and wells until it has to explode out of them. And so this practice that I teach, Zen practice, is just all about letting whatever it is be. And I say even exaggerate it. You know, if you're going to sneeze, frickin' sneeze. You know, if you're going to cough, just go in the other room if you have to and just go nuts. Cough. You know, but do it consciously. If you're going to have restless leg, you know, exaggerate it. Do it consciously. Let it do its thing. Your leg wants to shake, let your leg shake. But do it consciously again. So in terms of yawning, when you want to yawn, just yawn and exaggerate it and do it consciously.
Got it.
Sound?
Thank you.
Okay. And how, the thing that I remember most from my teacher is one time he was teaching us to meditate, and this girl raised her hand and she said, every time I go down to meditate, I sit down to meditate, I just want to go to sleep. So what should I do? He goes, go to sleep. Right? It's so simple. You know, when you want to yawn, just yawn. Do it consciously. And if you want to turn it into your teacher, exaggerate it. Anybody have any follow-up questions about this subject? Or Bob, do you have anything else you want to ask?
I don't. Just one quick put in. I use your four-step method in an interesting job interview the other day, and it worked like a top.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. And David, I'm sure you feel totally left out because you don't know what that is yet. At some point, we'll go through it all together as a group. Not just for your sake, but it's just a really gorgeous practice. And sometimes people need some help navigating a difficult emotion. So we will do it at some point. Maybe not tonight, though. Do you have a question, though?
Were you talking to me, David?
David. You were about to ask
something. Sorry. No. Yeah, I was just saying. No, the four steps, I believe I've read it because I think I downloaded your PDF and stuff, and I looked at your other things. So I just wanted a kind of a recap of one of those things, and I'm aware of that. And, so I think I kind of already, apply them for sure, and I'm still practicing it a little bit and trying to take it all in. But so I am aware actually of, again, when you recapped it, it was like, oh yeah, okay, that makes sense. It'll make sense. So yeah, it's perfect.
All right, and we're moving into your question next. And if anybody has been feeling sleepy on this call or like they want to yawn out of boredom, you're about to wake right up because this next question is about pornography addiction. David, I asked you before we got on this call, before we recorded the call, rather, whether this was okay to discuss in public, and you said it was okay. So bravo for you being so courageous. Yeah. I'm going to read your question. Unless this is your last chance to stop me.
Go ahead. No, absolutely. All right. Go ahead.
All right. The question reads, I'm blocked in allowing myself to be vulnerable with my wife and to allow myself to connect on a deeper level emotionally and intimately with her. I've been addicted to pornography for most of my life and have only been actively moving away and attacking the addiction the last year and a half. The little bit of work I've done with your course has helped, but I still struggle. She knows about the addiction and supports me in all I've done to get free from it, but the temptation is still strong and I break down and relapse more often than I'd like, which doesn't serve me in working towards closer intimacy. I'd love any guidance to directly make concrete what I'm suppressing. So I need more information from you, David.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
You know, because really there's nothing wrong with not wanting to have intimacy, and there's nothing wrong with looking at pornography in my book. You know, I just got back from Burning Man. I teach Zen. I would say that in Zen tradition, probably it's tradition for monks to look at pornography, be philanderers, drink copious amounts of alcohol. That's kind of the beauty of Zen, is that anything goes, right? Kind of like on the flight list that I referred to so far, with alcohol, drugs, pornography, none of these things are issues unless they become excessive. You know, on the flight list, there's all sorts of things like watching TV, eating, shopping, cleaning. None of these things are a sign of repressed emotions or a sign that there's anything wrong unless they become excessive. So my question is, because I live in Utah, and this is the highest incidence of pornography use in the country. A lot of Mormons are very sexually repressed. Pornography is a way for them to tap into their sexuality, maybe even, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but the question I have for you is it excessive?
Well, it is for me, and I just will say this, that I have never, Well, I've been with my, so we've been married for a year. We're actually getting married, we've been married legally in Germany for a year, and we're getting married in the next, 2 weeks, romantically here in Vancouver, Canada. I would feel we've got a very healthy relationship, but she's the only woman I've ever had a long-term relationship. So you guys will kind of laugh, but we've been together for 3 years. And to me, that's 2 years and 9 months longer than any other relationship I've ever had. So in other words, my most relationships were 3 months and 2 months of me wanting to leave. So I joke about that all the time because I'm a musician, I'm on stage. So I'm kind of open about that. And so I finally found someone that I really want to be with. And I really envision a future family and all the rest of that stuff. And that's not in doubt, but I do, but I would, I want to like, I want to be I'm more courageous in being vulnerable. I know that I sometimes find myself, we have a relationship where it's open, but we get into fights, and sometimes these fights I find myself holding resentment or whatever, and it's hard for me to get over it, and I want to get over it, and I want to be able to give myself to her, intimately, and give myself completely, and not have sex be ruined by me not giving myself completely to her. If you understand what I'm saying, where I feel like I'm not really, it just affects the sex life in that way, and so sometimes, yeah, there's dry spells that have been up to this point. Sometimes, week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, where there's nothing and not as much touch. And so I feel like I don't necessarily know exactly when I'm repressing or if I'm repressing fear to kind of be vulnerable again and give myself to her and allow myself to be hurt, if you will. I kind of have my walls built up sometimes, so that kind of gets in the way of, or at least I feel like that's in the way of me being myself, completely vulnerable, giving myself to her.
Okay. Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does. So, you've met this woman, you're really drawn to her, mm-hmm. and you want to bring your best mm-hmm. self to the relationship. And it probably took you a while to find her, and you don't want to blow it. And it's a deal breaker for her, not a deal breaker, it sounds, but she really would like you to give that up in favor of the opposite, which is more intimacy with her.
She's actually no influence on me giving it up. I myself feel that it gets in the way of, whenever I get stressed, I run to porn. Whenever I get afraid of things, I run to porn. It's been my refuge. So I want to feel whatever blockage and not have that as my yawning or my distraction. I want to be able to focus on whatever that is, that whatever fear that I might have that's blocking me from being intimate with her.
Okay. And for the rest of us on the call, we can take that sentence that David just spoke. Whenever I get stressed, I run to ... fill in the blank. For me, it's comfort food, TV. You can fill in the blanks yourself. Alone time for me. Does this mean that it's an addiction, though? That's kind of what I think we'd start with exploring. I'm glad that you brought this up. I've never had something like this come up with anyone I work with. My dad was, quote, addicted to porn. And he married a woman, my mom, who at 29 years old was still a virgin. She saved herself for marriage, and on their wedding night, he didn't even want to have sex. And my mom has been very open about this. And I found, my dad's porn stash at a very young age, and it definitely impacted my life to see that kind of stuff at such a young age. And my mother and my father, I don't know that he had an addiction to porn, but I think he had an addiction. Well, there's feeling shame and guilt can be a sexual turn-on. I don't know if that's what's going on here, but that is definitely a thing. Mm. I had an ex-boyfriend that was like that. So there may even be the addiction to the shame and guilt that comes from the porn. Like, there's oftentimes a lot going on with these, quote, addictions. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you're addicted or not, but, you know, going back to the question, whenever I get stressed, I, quote, I run to dot, dot, dot. Like, what is it, the thing that you run to? And this is how we can incorporate everybody that's on this call into this conversation. You know, and like I said, porn is not a big deal. You know, junk food or TV or comfort food or being alone is not a problem. You know, whenever you get stressed, it's nice to have something to run to. Other people run to running or being out in nature. You know, these things are not a bad thing, even if they are socially taboo. But when they inhibit your ability to be the type of person you want to be, or if, you know, you're turning to comfort food again and again and you're getting overweight, it can sure seem like an addiction. An addiction, like alcohol or drugs, are not a problem or considered an addiction until they actually start negatively affecting your life. You know, that's when you know that it's an addiction. And I know that it ruined my parents' marriage because my father married a woman for whom that was not okay. There are plenty of women out there that would be supportive of you watching pornography, you know, would watch it with you. But you're marrying a woman for whom that is not okay.
Yeah.
And I don't know if she feels this way, but you feel that it takes you away from intimacy and emotional connection, and you feel like it's run its course and it's not okay, and it's time for you to grow up and be who you really want to be versus who you're just habitually. Okay.
Exactly. Yes.
All right. So, and bringing it into the rest of the room too, and everybody that's listening, like, what kind of habits do you have that you run to during stress? Go back to that question. And is it time for you to give them up? You know, I personally don't want to give up comfort food, but I probably should, because it's causing me brain fog. You know, there's consequences to these kinds of things. Like, instead of running to my partner in times of stress, I run away from my partner. You know, that's not necessarily the type of person I want to be either. So is it time for all of us to grow up and kind of look at these things and ascertain whether we want to take steps to move beyond them or not? So you mentioned that you have done some work around this. What kind of work have you done, David?
Well, I've elected your PDFs and the things that you have. I've read several books on pornography addiction as well, and as well as read the book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. I don't know if you know that book. It's from the 80s. And these have all been tremendously helpful. So I've read probably two or three books on it. And so I've been, like I said, I've been working on it for the last year and a half or so. So I've made, you know, tremendous progress. I think you're, like I said, when I started, when I found, I can't remember exactly how I found you anymore. Now it's been a little while though, but I've watched your videos and whatnot. And I think what stuck with me was that what you resist persists. And for me, I can never get past 2 weeks or a month or so without relapsing or so. And so I thought, okay, you know, and so in the beginning there was, you know, really, I really got past a lot of the urges and stuff, but, I'm not sure if that's necessarily the cause of it, but I feel like it is. I feel like it's connected, because I've certainly gotten closer to my wife since then, since I've been attacking it, and it's brought, and I've certainly, my life has improved a lot since then, because every time that I wanted to look at porn, I was afraid of something. So I kind of, instinctually, through everything, like, I only discovered your course maybe a month ago, I want to say, or maybe 6 weeks ago or so. And as I looked at them, like, okay, a lot of these things I was kind of doing already. Like, when I decided to attack the addiction, then of course I've faced a lot more of my life. When I've faced a lot more of my life, I've gotten a lot more done, developed much more confidence in myself, and really gone out and done some great things. So, So yeah, it's, but I find with intimacy, it's kind of a, I find intimacy in particular has been a difficult thing. And like I'm a musician, so I go on stage. There's a lot of fear there. I did stand-up comedy, just the other day, just tried it for the first time.
I'm going to stop you because we're running out of time and I want to get to work.
I apologize.
And the one thing about working with me personally is we don't spend that much time talking about our story on these things. We just get right to work.
Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure,
right.
Sounds good.
And
yeah,
no need to apologize because all of it was valuable information. But let's everybody, we're going to do voice dialogue. And I assume that you had a course where you experienced voice dialogue with me. So just play along. This is the first time that I'm going to be facilitating you as best you can. But allow me, please, to speak to the voice of urge. And everybody go there now and just be the voice of urge. So just tell me what it feels like to be you.
Okay. Right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're the voice of urge. You're not David anymore. You're just urge.
Ah, okay.
Okay?
Okay. Okay.
Just how do you show up physically? Do you show up mentally? Do you show up physically in the body?
When I'm the voice of urge, so when I have the urge to do something, you're saying?
All right, so because you haven't been facilitated by me before, and can you tell me, did you buy one of my courses by any chance?
I did, well, I apologize.
I'll reach out to you after these calls, because what I do is voice dialogue, and if you haven't done it before through one of the courses, then you may get left behind a bit. So can I
why don't I
show you with somebody else who's on the call, and then it'll be more clear to you, okay? And then you can play along as not an observer, but just play along as much as you possibly can, where you actually embody the voice of urge. But is there somebody that's on the call that would like to volunteer as the voice of urge to be in the hot seat?
Hi, Kristen.
Okay. I recognize your voice. It's Dequetta. So allow me, please, to speak to the voice of urge.
Okay.
Who am I speaking to? So I'm just going to facilitate Jaquetta, and David, you play along as well and observe what I'm doing with her, okay? And just see what it feels like to be you as the voice of urge. We're leaving David behind now. All right, so Jaquetta, who am I speaking to?
Urge.
Okay. So tell me, what is it that you urge for?
Something new, something anticipated, something familiar, comfort, excitement. I am bright and I am beckoning.
How big of a part of Jaquetta's life are you?
I'm a great friend.
Jaquetta likes to drink. How do you show up in her life regarding alcohol?
I invite her to have a beer.
Ah,
but I show
you're that
up,
first invitation.
I'm not a thought. I'm not a word. I'm pure feeling.
What kind of physical shape do you take on? Like, I feel like it's like, my heart is just jumping out of my chest and my arms are reaching for something.
Yeah, I am where urgent comes from. So I'm very demanding and encouraging. Food, alcohol, I'm about comfort. But I'm also about fun and excitement and distraction. I'm a good party.
I can show up as the urge to say something outrageous. Or the urge, you know, I show up as riding my bike too fast. or skiing too fast, even though there's a more reasonable part of Kristen that says, oh no, you know. How habitual are you in what you urge after?
I don't know what that is.
What do you mean?
What do you mean?
Meaning you're just the sensation of urge.
Yeah.
Okay. Allow me, we're going to do rapid fire. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who likes something. Who am I speaking to?
I like something.
Okay. You're not the voice of urge. But you're, you know, a little bit there. You're part of that department. So I'm going to rapid fire a bunch of different voices and just go with the feeling of these voices, everyone, not the conversation. So you're the one who likes something. Just notice what it feels like to be you. Now allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who loves something. Who am I speaking to?
Ooh, I love something.
So notice how you feel and how different you are from like.
Born.
Now allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who's tempted by something. Who am I speaking to?
I'm tempted.
Very different from like, very different from love. What's that?
I have some hesitation.
Okay. Tempted, but there's some hesitation. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who's in the habit of doing something. Who am I speaking to?
Habit.
Just notice how you're different from the one who's tempted, from liking or loving, but there's actually action involved with you. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who's feeling compelled to do something. Who am I speaking to? Very different. Now allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who feels an urge to do something. Who am I speaking to?
I feel an urge to do something.
Now allow me, please, to speak to the one who feels an urge to do something, and that urge is not resisted. Who am I speaking to?
Feel an urge to do something, and the urge is not resisted.
Now allow me, please, to speak to the voice of an irresistible urge to do something, and it's not resisted.
Feel an irresistible urge, and it is not resisted.
Now allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who's addicted to something. Who am I speaking to?
And the one who is addicted to something.
So there are so many different levels of how we react to things that we want to do. And if it's something that's feeding the hummingbirds or going for a walk, you know, there's no heat around that. But if it's something that's deemed unhealthy, like alcohol, drugs, a porn addiction, sex, that kind of thing, I mean, there's sex addicts. But there's a very big difference between liking something, loving something, feeling compelled to have sex versus an addiction to sex. Taking it into pornography, you know, there's the urge to look at pornography that's not resisted. That's very, very different from an irresistible urge to look at pornography, which is also very, very different from an addiction to pornography. And so we have a habit in our culture of saying, oh my gosh, I'm starving, you know, when we're hungry. or we, you know, we may sometimes exaggerate things a little bit, I dare say.
Mm-hmm.
So taking it back to you, David,
mm-hmm.
you know, in trying on okay. the flavor of all these different voices, where do you fit in the spectrum? Are you really addicted to porn, or is it something else?
There is, no, I do believe that there's an addiction, because the thing is, that was actually a really great exercise. So thanks for sharing that. That's fantastic. It was great to embody all the different voices and to separate these emotions. That was fantastic. So let me first say that, no, because the thing is, there is this kind of, irresistible, I can't say no to it. Feeling like it usually starts out with the curiosity, like, oh, what's this? And then, like, I say, I can't, you know, there's a kind of a need. And it'll, yeah, so it can pass sometimes, but yeah, I feel like a need. What's going on here? Oops, sorry. There's an alarm going off. Sorry, I was going to another room here. Anyway, yes, so yeah, I find that there's I cannot. For me, I would define an addiction as something that I can't control. Would that not be a definition of it?
Yes. Yes. Like I said, there's a difference between an urge not resisted and an irresistible urge. And once you tip over the edge of it being an irresistible urge, then it gets to be an addiction. And I do know that people, you can actually study this in the brain. It might even be something you can study at 23andMe, but there are people who are innately born with an addictive personality. And, you know, it could be video games, it could be porn, it could be sex, it could be drugs, alcohol. Like, I just had my mm-hmm. best friend in the whole world actually die from drug addiction. And, you know, he didn't discover drugs until he was in his 40s. But before that, you know, he was addicted to video games. And then he was addicted to gambling once he got off the drugs. And anyway, it's considered a disease for a reason, because it is, you are kind of like having red hair, you know, you have this mm-hmm. genetic predisposition to have an addictive personality. So
mm-hmm.
We're going to explore this again some more.
Sure.
But I'm going to just bookmark this for now until you and I have a chance to talk and I get
sure.
you kind of up to speed on voice dialogue. Does anybody have any questions or clarifications or anything else that you want to add to the conversation before we move on?
I just want to say quickly that the voice dialogue thing was really great for me. I could imagine myself in all those different voices, and I thought that was really great. So I appreciate that. Just want to say that.
Okay, great. Well, this is going to be a really interesting topic to explore, and just your homework is for this group that's listening to write me and tell me if you feel like you have an addictive personality, and if so, how it's manifesting, so that I can weave that into our conversation next week. Moving on, Jaquetta, while you're here, I mentioned that we would do a couple of voices that you requested. It didn't come in the form of a question, but it was a promise to you. And the three voices that I have, the two that we talked about and then one that I'm adding on, which I think could be relevant for everybody on the call, is the voice of have to conform, because Jaquetta's in a career. Anyone that has a boss will be able to relate to this voice. She has a career where she is in an office, and it's a lot about conforming to what they want her to be and need her to be so that she can fit in. These are all voices related to work for her, but it may show up differently for everybody. It may not be work-related. The other voice is can't be myself. They're kind of tied together. I can't be myself. I have to conform. I have to conform. I can't be myself. Or the voice of what if, which kind of seems separate, but it just came up. So, Jaquetta, pick your poison. Have to conform. Which voice do you want to be facilitated in? Have to conform, can't be myself, or what if?
What if?
Oh, please.
Okay. All right, let's all go there right now. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of what if. Who am I speaking to? And Jaquetta, you be in the hot seat.
What if?
Just spend a moment there. What if? And it's going to be different for everyone. You know, what if? What if I was as successful as I claim I want to be? What if I wasn't married? What if? What if? How's it showing up for you, Jaquetta?
It's very much a double-edged sword. What if I did quit?
And notice, because I'm a fear specialist, your what if could be, what if I didn't have this anxiety? What if I didn't have this sleep issue? What if my sleep issue gets worse? What if I did quit is how it's showing up for you, Jaquetta. So stay with that and just see where it takes you. I rode my bike for 2 hours earlier today, and I got into this weird fantasy situation where somebody offered to buy my house for hundreds of thousands of dollars more than it was worth. And it was such an enticing fantasy. I went flying by my car at high speed, didn't even notice that I should have taken a left-hand turn, and the ride was over, right? So we oftentimes get caught up in you as a voice. What if, what if? And you can be a real stuck place, but you can also offer great wisdom. How are you showing up for Jaquetta right now as the voice of what if?
She can fall off either side of the cliff. What if I get fired? What if I can't conform? What if I tell them all to fuck directly off? What if I just don't care anymore, and therefore everything is literally water off the duck's back?
What if I didn't have this porn addiction? Would life not be as interesting? What if I never got to have an intimacy, emotional connection with my soon-to-be legal wife? What if I did have an emotional, intimate connection with my legal wife? It's like, what if you are about the future? You know, what if? And you can definitely start an internal dialogue like no other. So what are you offering Jaquetta right now as the voice of what if? Why did she pick you? Why did she want to spend some time with you in our final few minutes of this call?
Perspective. On both sides. A different job somewhere else. Or broken, can't pay the mortgage, and the cat's sick. Should go either way.
People can get stuck in indecision if they get stuck in you, and round you go. How can you best serve people so that they don't get stuck going round and round with you? You're supposed to be like a temporary kind of conversation, internal conversation. If you get ignited, maybe she can try on some new possibilities, but she can also get stuck in you. Like, I guess, what advice do you have to give, Jaquetta?
Certainly a path to creativity and figuring out, looking for, or having newer experiences or other possibilities just arrive. When I'm there, things you never thought of that could be possible can show up. And I turn right around and offer some stern warnings as well. If you want to fly, take an airplane. Don't jump off the building. They're both flying.
For anyone else on the call, as the voice of what if, how are you showing up for the self? Anybody else want to chime in right now?
This is ML. I'll chime in. So, as the voice of what if, I get shunned a lot because ML thinks that if I am too influential, she might make a decision that she regrets. So I don't get much airtime because really she sees me as like always introducing what if this bad thing happens instead of like what if you could have it all. She doesn't see that I can do that too.
So you're showing up mostly in a fear-based way. You know, what if I get fired in Jaquetta's case? What if I don't feel better? What if my sleep patterns get worse, not better? Right.
What if my addiction is my best friend and I actually don't really want to give it up, you know?
Right. What if I can't crack this addiction?
Yeah. What if I can't flip the switch? Am I screwed, you know? She doesn't find me entertaining. I have lots of great ways to get her thinking, and she's always assuming I'm going to put her down a rabbit hole. But there's also a lot of good what ifs. So, I mean, I think I have value either way, but she's gotten burned by me, I guess.
Here's a exercise. As the voice of what if, however you're showing up in the most fear-based way, do the opposite right now. Like, what if I get fired? Now do what if I don't get fired? Just take whatever sentence you have as the voice of what if and do the exact 180. What if I don't get rid of this porn addiction? What if I do get rid of this porn addiction? Life is going to be very, very dramatically different when the opposite of you actually occurs. And you have to, you know, put in here, be careful what you wish for. Because a lot of what I teach is about there's a payoff for having your problem. Always there's a payoff. You know, what if I get fired? But what if I don't get fired? Then I get stuck in this job for the rest of my life, right? That sucks as bad as getting fired. Right, Jaquetta?
Yeah, right? what if I choose to quit instead of actually getting fired?
Right. ML, so your what if, what's your biggest what if?
What if I'm not supposed to be with Frank?
What if I am supposed to be with Frank? So also try that on. How scary is that? It's almost equally scary because
of what he requires of you. I got a smile on my face, actually, but it's because for that moment I didn't think of all the things that the accountability stuff. Just thinking about stuff.
So here's everybody's homework then. Here's everybody's homework. I want you to have a what if practice. And then whatever it is that shows up, like, every morning, you know, until we meet again next week, every morning write down what if. And just write one sentence down. This will take you only a minute. I aim to please, you know. What if I... And then write down your biggest fear. And then do the opposite, you know. Well, what if I don't do my biggest fear? Or that my biggest fear doesn't happen? Just try those two sentences on and just see how they feel. And then based on that, submit your next questions for next week. We will continue the porn addiction conversation. We will continue Nancy's additional questions. And Jaquetta, at some point, we will do the other voices, have to conform and can't be myself. So that's your homework, though. Any questions?
No, so just what if the different scenarios for what we're struggling with, yeah?
Yes. So just every morning, go get a piece of paper. Use the same piece of paper every week or every day. Just what if, and then write down your biggest fear that completes that sentence. So it's a sentence completion. What if I never write my second book? You know, what if I do write my second book? Just try it on. Like, that's going to be probably mine tomorrow morning. So you guys, it'll be two sentences. The first sentence that comes up, and then the opposite of that sentence. And then just contemplate these. And that's how I want you guys to find your next questions for our next call next week. Everybody
and so if I contemplate, just kind of write down, like, what we're noticing, like, oh, I'm noticing, are we kind of checking in with our bodies and anything like that? Or are we just kind of writing anything down that we notice about those different presentations?
You don't need to write anything more than those two sentences. It's just a sentence completion, what if, what's true for you, and then turn the sentence on its head. You know, do the opposite, write the opposite of the sentence you just wrote. So it's just two sentences every day and just see what comes up.
Okay.
Okay.
Roger that.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks.
Yep.
Right. Thank you.
And it's an awareness practice. It's an awareness practice. So anything else?
That's just Bob. I was just going to say we just had a 5.1 earthquake. There were a lot of what ifs flying.
What? Where are you?
In Anchorage.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well,
it was small. It was small, but the what ifs are flying. Is this going to get bigger? Oh, you know, what's next?
All right. That's like everybody's laughing nervously. All right. I put my hands together. I bow to you. Thank you for engaging in consciousness practice with me today. Thank you for your patience at the beginning of the call while we worked out the snafus. Good job, you guys. Talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Kristen.
Thank you, Kristen.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Yeah.